This is a new English language podcast from SGH, Warsaw School of Economics, featuring leading voices in economics, public policy and management. I'm Roberto Gallia, and for our maiden episode, I'm joined by Elsa Fornero, professor at the University of Turin and former Italian Minister of Labour, known for leading a major pension reform during the Eurozone crisis. Also, Vice Rector for Research, Agnieszka Hwoń-Domańczyk, renowned demographer and president of a government population council. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Today we'll explore how pension systems are evolving and why reform remains so challenging. So, Professor Fornero, you have just been a key speaker at a conference here in Warsaw, Poland, about pensions. What do you think of the talks?
You said pension reforms are a challenging issue. True, but before being challenging, they are necessary. Why are pension reforms necessary almost everywhere in Europe, let's say? Because we are living two very important transition. One is the demographic transition, which means that we will have less young people and more older people. And since the pension, as we have now in most European countries, is based on transferring money from those who pay contributions to those who receive their pension benefits, this changing in the demographics is very, very important, and it is challenging. Unless we have an increase in productivity, so that means unless we have an increase in what the workers produce and also receives from their work and can pay higher contributions, this will mean a disequilibrium. So money will not be sufficient to pay for benefits. That's why we need to reform pension system. But why are they so unpopular? Because you have to tell people a word that people don't like particularly, and that is sacrifices. In order to rearrange the pension system, we need to ask people, workers, to work longer or pensioners to receive less, let's say, indexation to inflation. In any case, we have to distribute sacrifices. So this is what makes a pension reform very difficult to enact, particularly with populist government, because they never want to say that they are asking people something. They always want to say that they are giving people everything.
In fact, this is a topic that I'd like to touch on, but perhaps a little bit later. But let's talk about politics and let's talk about electoral promises. Just before an election, politicians would come around saying, this is going to happen, we're going to improve roads, we're going to give your children better schools, we're going to improve everything, your salaries, we're going to reduce inflation. But when they start thinking about pensions, which will happen 20, 30, 40 years down the line, people sort of find it difficult to understand why this is an important issue. So as an economist, and through your experience of introducing several reforms, how do you think a government, economists, other educators should approach the issue?
I think that politicians should speak openly and sincerely, which is something that they don't think will reward them. And so this somehow is diseducating people. We, for example, many European countries, because of all the shocks that we have gone through, starting from the financial crisis in 2006-08, before the Great Recession, then the COVID, then the energy crisis, then the wars that are spreading, all these shocks have urged governments to spend. To spend without possibly taxing for the new expenses. And this has meant deficit,
and also
public deficit.
Massive debt.
And debt. Because if you have a deficit, then that increases your debt. For example, Italy now has a debt to GDP, gross domestic product, which is about 135, which is quite high.
It is very high.
Is going to increase. When you have a debt, a financial crisis is always possible. Something happens and you are there because, let's say, the financial sector will say, we don't trust any longer that government, and so please keep the money out of the public bonds there. And that means that since the government do not issue money, it means a possible crisis. Our government was asked to enter government exactly on the
promises
of a financial crisis. And we could not deliver, you know, benefits for people. We were supposed to say to the Italian citizens, it's the time to do some sacrifices. And we did this, and that is why we were not so popular. And among this, we had, for example, the pension reform. You said the severe pension reform, but the disequilibrium in the system was huge. And the European Central Bank had written a letter to the Italian government saying, okay, we are ready to buy your bonds, provided you do, among others, a pension reform and the labor market reform, which I also signed.
So it came with a financial incentive as well.
Well, not a financial incentive. If
they knew that the bonds were going to be purchased.
They said, we are going to buy your bonds, which of course is a help to the government, but you have to deliver reforms. The political parties were not ready to enact. And that's why they did not ask the president of the republic to ask the people and go to the election, general election. They said, no, ask the technocrats to do the reform. And this is what I believe it's really populism, because populism are, let's say, not very near to the people. They mimic to be near to the people. And they promise everything. And it happens again in every electoral period. They promise almost everything. I can tell you that, for example, a few parties in particular said, well, we will cancel the pension reform that our government proposed and Parliament approved. We will cancel. And they have promised this for more than 10 years now, but they couldn't. Why is this? Because it's easy to say that you reduce the retirement age. It's easy to say that you would like to increase pensions and to enlarge indexation. But when you don't have the money and you have many needs, because it's not only social protection, it's not just for the elderly population, but it's also for the young who are unemployed and maybe who try to migrate. It's also for the people that cannot cure themselves because the hospitals have long queue. And it's also because when the energy prices increases, some people have difficulty in paying the energy for their heating. And so you need money. And if you spend a lot and if you promise a lot, the money can only come through the debt. But if the debt is already very high, you cannot possibly increase it. And this is exactly the situation in which we are now. Because, you know, the situation is very difficult, particularly for the energy and for the crises that are coming from the, let's say, the Hormuz closure. but it's very difficult to exit from the new stability pact because we signed it. And that, in a way, constrained the country to reduce debt. And if you want to reduce debt, there is only one way. You have to have a surplus in your budget.
And which if you, is difficult to find.
Which is
nowadays.
Difficult, exactly, because to have a surplus, you either reduce expenses, very unpopular, or you increase taxes.
Between a rock and a hard place. It's one is unpopular.
In Italy, we say
worse.
Between Scilla and Caridi,
yes.
Which is the strait between Sicily and Calabria.
Exactly. So tight straits. Let's see, we have an expert today about demographics. So we're discussing with the professor here about the financial aspect of pension reform. But there is another solution, and the other solution would be to increase population, basically to have more babies. Is this realistic?
What we observe right now in Europe, in particular, is that it is really not very realistic at the moment.
And it takes time.
And it takes time. But our countries introduced pension reforms in the late 1990s. We already observed declining fertility, with some expectations that maybe in the future some of this fertility would go up a little bit. But right now, after more than a quarter of a century of reform implementations, we actually see the other trend, that in many countries in Europe, including Italy, Poland, Latvia, so the countries that have very similar pension systems, the fertility is actually going down. The crisis, pandemics, uncertainty are all the causes of young people deciding to postpone or resign from having children. So again, when Professor Fornero said about money and taxes, the issue is that it actually comes from mainly from people who are in working age, who are economically active.
Mm-hmm.
Long periods of low fertility mean that in many of the countries, and definitely in Poland, we observe that the working age population is actually declining. We can borrow some from migrations, and we discussed that.
Which is unpopular in itself.
Which is unpopular in itself, but it is a reality in many of the developed countries, but that doesn't really solve the problem. It is a temporary solution to buy some time, but at the end of the day, we really need to look at mechanisms that balance between generations in a way which is acceptable for all generations, but also allow young people to look into the future with knowledge that it's not that the entire financing of the future will come on their shoulders. Because when we think about this debt of 135% of GDP, it means that ultimately the future generations
have to pay.
So they would have to pay for themselves, but also for the debt that was accumulated before.
By the previous generation, of course.
May I add that, for example, OECD just estimated that Italy will lose in the next 30 years 35% of the working age population. Can you imagine that? It's more than one third.
And so basically, one in three workers today will not be
and
around.
Mind you that Italian young are expatriating, are migrating, because they say that Italy does not provide them opportunities. And many of them have a degree, a master, and even a PhD.
So we talk about migrating workers. So Italian workers going to other countries. Does this result in any country, let's say they go beyond the EU, stay within the EU, does this mean that there are some countries which are not struggling with a pension reform problem?
I would say not as some of them. For example, Portugal has done a pension reform and has done many other reforms. Portugal had many, many problems, also with the help of the EU. Now they are more or less stabilized.
And what did they do? Can we learn anything from Portugal?
Labor market reform, pension reforms. the education system reforms, helping the transition of firms in terms of innovation and digitalization. There was a whole, menu of reforms that somehow people accepted. Also Greece, I'm talking of two countries. You remember the term PIGS that was used in the past was Portugal, Ireland, Italy with the two I,
yes,
and Greece. They were, the countries in Europe.
The slower members.
Yeah, having more problems. And with some sufficiency, I would say, the Nordic country would say, oh, damn, they are lost countries. But nowadays, Greece has gone through a very, very difficult period. But nowadays, Greece is growing. Portugal is growing. Spain is growing. What Italy, I'm sad to say, still lacks is growth. That is GDP increase and also an equitable distribution of the increase. So salaries are low. Salaries have not increased in the past 20 years. And that's why it's difficult for the young to find opportunities.
So one solution that you're mentioning is the fact that if workers earn more, even despite the fact that prices are going up, inflation for fuel, for bills, heating bills, as you said, food going to the grocery is always more expensive. But if they earn more and they have more in their pocket, they will save more? Or is it a fact that they will not complain as much once the government asks them to contribute more?
No, I would say both, because when we talk about earning more, when we talk about increasing earnings, we mean real increase. We don't mean nominal increase with having a higher wage that can buy even less goods than before because prices have gone up more than your earnings. When we talk about earnings increase, it's a real one. I mean, it's in purchasing power that you can... And so your welfare is greater. Your welfare is better. Where does this come? Not from a decree of some government. It comes from what economists call productivity. Why does productivity increase? When there is innovation, when there is investment in human and fixed capital, in technology. If you have, this is one of the Italian problems, is that we have very, very small firms who survive. They have little profit. They can pay very low wages. They are not in very innovative sectors. Then we have wonderful firms, medium size, who can win the international competition because they are innovative, they are technologically very advanced, but there are too small of them, number of them. While we have a huge number of very small firms who have difficulties. If we, for example, like many people are asking, and I agree, if we put a minimum wage, not like in Germany, what is it now, 14 euro per hour? We say 10 euro per hour. But we know that this will put out of the market firms that are somehow surviving, as I said before. So
Just about.
And so this is something that can increase. When you increase productivity, you increase wages. On higher wages, you pay more contributions, and you somehow help the pension system. Because I said before, a lower number of working age population, so mean lower employees, unless they have higher wage to pay more contributions, how can we do to pay for an increasing number of pensions because retirees increase. We can have resort to migration, but for example, we said before about populists that there is a close association between populists and nationalists. So normally populists are not very keen on having migrants. Well, they even consider migrants as a kind of a scapegoat. So it's very, very difficult. And this, I love my country, but I see that we have a lot of problems. Of course, meanwhile, as Agnieszka was saying, because it's very difficult to pronounce entire name or surname.
And we know each other for many years.
Yeah, exactly. And so Agnieszka was saying we have a temporary solution. One of the temporary solutions, which we highly recommend, is increasing women's participation in the labor market, women employment rate. This is necessary. And in general, the whole employment rate, which is in Italy now a bit lower than 63%, so it's 62.5, but we have some Nordic country where the employment rate is 87, for example, or Germany, it's 77, 78. So why are we happy with the 63%? True, we have moonlight jobs. Moonlight jobs help, let's say, poverty, in the sense that if you work as an irregular, in an irregular, then your poverty is less than apparent, but you lose all social protection. And society
loses your money. Is not going into the pension system.
Absolutely. That is one problem, because with the moonlight jobs, you have tax evasion and contribution evasion. So that is not a solution. Mm-hmm. So there are many problems.
We spoke about populism. We spoke about Italy. Let's talk about something which is more newsworthy, Hungary. Viktor Orban has been ousted in a recent election.
We don't cry for that, absolutely.
He attacked the pension system. He changed the pension system. He overhauled the pension system. How has that affected negatively, in your opinion, the Hungarian economy?
Well, I think he attacked many more things. I remember many years ago, I received an email from a colleague in Hungary saying, I can't remember his name because the difficulty in pronouncing Hungarian names is even greater than pronouncing Polish names. But he said, well, my course has been cancelled, because it was a course on migration. But then the whole university was closed because it was financed by Soros, and it was moved to Vienna.
To Vienna, Central European University.
Yes, Central European University. When a government interfere with the higher education, with the freedom of teaching and the freedom of thinking and of expression and of press, that is really very bad. So he did not just change the pension system. But of course, we used to think of Hungary as a non-democratic country. And I personally was always wondering why the EU, the European Commission, did not somehow impose some kind of restrictions
to
Hungary.
There were some restrictions, but I don't think they were strong enough.
Personally, many Italian people were quite happy that Hungary, well, rejected Orban, although there are many people in Italy that were Orban's friends. But in any case, what we don't know is that this new government will be more truly European supporter, in the sense of the European values, which are at risk now. So I'm glad that Orbán has left in a democratic way, yes, by the choice of the Hungarian population. I hope that the new government will be more European in terms of European values, and that we restrict the area of autocracy in Europe instead of democracies.
But let me a little bit follow up on the pension issues and the pension reversals, because Hungary as well as Poland embarked on quite ambitious pension reforms in the late 1990s that were aimed to use not only the potential of the labor market, but also financial market in order to provide for the future pensions. And what happened in Hungary and to some extent in Poland as well is that indeed those pension savings invested in financial markets were reversed. And that causes a certain distrust to government policies, which is very important, because pensions are a very long-term policy, and you cannot really change pension systems every government. There's a need for continuity and for building trust.
To stick to your decisions, even though it was...
To decisions, but also building trust across different generations that the pension system will deliver. Because when people believe that the system will deliver, they are more likely to actually pay contributions. If people believe that system will not provide them with pensions in the future, they have more tendency to evade. So in a way, what happened in Hungary, what also happened in Poland, is that with the reversal, there's a huge building of distrust towards systems that were already quite new, and they needed this kind of trust building and building the sense of continuity and sticking to what was planned. Because it did not happen, the current Hungarian government faces quite a difficult task of thinking how to keep the pension system running and stable. This is also what happened in Poland, that with the reversal of the funded system, it's very difficult right now to convince people that the pension system, the public pension system, because of demography, because of the challenges that are quite similar between Poland and Italy, cannot really provide very generous pension benefits in the future. And people need to provide for their own pensions with some pension savings, but having little trust towards long-term savings mechanisms, that makes it very difficult. So that is really, thinking about pensions is really a need to think in long term and find ways to actually make consensus across different political parties, which is one of the most difficult things in public policies, I believe.
True, because a pension system as we have, that is one that is what we call a pay-as-you-go pension system, is a social contract. Is a social contract involving all generations, even those who are not yet born. And who defend those generations? Because they don't vote, for example, the young and newborn generations. But they will be asked to enter. When I meet the young people, and they always say, oh, we will not have any pension at all. And I said, no, this is not true. It depends on how, not lucky, but how good your working career will be and your earning will be. If you have a good working career and a more than decent salary, then you will have pension. And if you pay now and your money does go to pay for the current retirees, but there are new generations that will enter, and you believe in this because politicians are also protecting those new generations, and for example, what we said before, providing them with opportunities so that they don't need to migrate, then the system is consistent and people have confidence in it. But if they interpret politicians as having a very short horizon that includes only the next elections, which is normally months ahead, not years ahead, then this means that people will not have confidence. Why should they? I ask people, do you think that the state will ask you, do you want to join the public pension system? No, because this is not a free choice. This is compulsory. The system is compulsory. It is compulsory because it is a social contract that has to be made safe, not just for the present generation, but also for the future generation. We said before about the Italian problems. One of the problems is that poverty has increased. And you know where? With the young generations. The older generations have been somehow protected, but the young generations not. So poverty now...
They are entering a very difficult labor market. They are entering a housing market, which is almost
difficult
impossible
also,
to enter.
Yeah.
Inflation
exactly.
is hitting them extremely hard.
So social protection is rightly for the older generation, but it also has to look at the education for the young, for the children and the young, to empower them in the labor market, to make them more productive, and to enhance their capability to be more productive and earn a higher income themselves and make a family, have a family.
Yes, I mean, the governments face quite a huge difficulty of having this intergenerational social contract well balanced. And this is something that the European governments struggle with, mainly because of the demographics that we've told about. Increasing life expectancy, declining fertility, and really in that case, investing in the young generation so that they want to have families, they want to have children, they feel the sense of stability is crucial for the future of pension systems,
Absolutely.
But also crucial for our economy. This is a difficult message for the governments that you have multiple goals and you have to juggle between them in a way that all generations feel that they are treated fairly.
Perfect. On that note, we will end our episode today. I was joined by Professor Elsa Fornero. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. And all the best to the Polish population and particularly to the young population.
Wish them all the best. And to Ms. Agnieszka Chłoń-Domańczyk, that is an extremely difficult name. Thank you for coming and we'll meet again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.